Over the last few months, I've had a lot of private conversations with store owners about the state of independent retail. They've confided in me about a wide range of challenges that they're facing individually as well as collectively as a shopkeeper group. Things like the economy, less foot traffic in their stores, staffing, and cash flow limitations have forced them to rethink how they're running their businesses and also planning for the future. Now, here at Proof to Product, we focus on teaching you, a manufacturer, how to sell wholesale, and independent retailers make up the majority of our alumni community's wholesale revenue, which is why it is important that we not only build strong relationships with these shop owners, but that we also take time to listen to the challenges that they are facing. Having these conversations and actively listening to the pain points that shop owners are having, it does three things for us. One, it enables us as a manufacturer to better support our customers. Two, it informs our decisions around sales and marketing strategies specifically for wholesale. And three, it enables us to understand the state of the industry and how the challenges that shop owners are facing will eventually impact the businesses that we are running. Over the next two episodes of Proof to Product, we are taking you behind the scenes into a candid conversation with two shop owners who are giving us an inside look at the state of independent retail currently and the challenges that many shopkeepers are experiencing. Our guests for this two-part podcast series are Katie Wilson of Crush and Touch and Jen Palacio of Tiny Turns Papery. Katie owns an art supply store in Southern California, and Jen owns a stationery and gift shop in Massachusetts. In today's episode, we are talking about their summer 2023 sales season, how they are preparing for the Q4 2023 holiday season, how the current economic climate is affecting their businesses, and what's on the mind of shopkeepers right now. They're going to tell us what they're talking about in their private Facebook groups. Today's episode is sponsored by our Unlock Buyer Secrets interview series. To make a strong first impression with wholesale buyers, we need to do a few things really well. We need to make it easy for stores to purchase from us. We need to have clear pricing and terms and conditions. We need to clearly communicate and add value at every touch point. And we need to focus on building strong relationships with our customers. And all of this becomes infinitely easier when we actively listen to what our customers need. This on-demand interview series will give you a competitive edge by providing an exclusive window into what buyers want and need from you. And the best part? It's only $27. Get access at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. That's prooftoproduct.com/unlock. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Jen and Katie, welcome back to Proof to Product. So happy to have you here.
So glad to be here. Hi, Katie. Hi, Jen.
Always fun to talk to you guys.
I know. The three of us could talk shop for days, I swear. So to give our listeners a little bit of background, you recently participated in our Paper Camp program as speakers. And we talked about building relationships with buyers, best practices for pitching stores, and even how much follow-up is too much. And I thought it was such a rich and rewarding call. And after we hung up, the three of us got to talking about shifts in the industry and the general state of retail. And that's what I'd like to dive into today with both of you, just to kind of get a sense of where things are going and how they've been for you for the last few quarters. So before I dive into some of my questions, can you both give our listeners a quick overview of your store, mainly where you're located, what types of products you carry, and who your core customers are? Katie, do you want to go first?
Sure. So I own Crush and Touch Art Supply with my partner, Scotty, and we are in the Highland Park neighborhood of Los Angeles, California. We bill ourselves as a neighborhood art supply store that also carries art-focused gifts. So we do have a full range of art supplies. We also carry the full range of my greeting card and sticker line, The Good Twin. But aside from that, we sell a lot of hair clips, a lot of stickers, a lot of prints, candles, gifts. Our price point tends to be a little bit on the lower side. Our customer is pretty diverse in age, but we do have a lot of young customers. We're near college. Our customer is queer. They're creative. They're looking for things that they can't necessarily find other places. So we're always on the hunt for unique products that sit well with an artist customer.
Awesome. That's great. Jen, what about you?
I own Tiny Turns Papery in Somerville, Massachusetts, which is just north of Boston. So we're primarily a stationery store and gift boutique. Our customers are very wide ranging, actually, because we have started to get some tourists back. So there's a little bit of people who are looking to get souvenirs or things that remind them of the Boston area. But we have so many colleges right around us. So there's a range of young professionals, college students, young families, and we carry everything from baby gifts to smaller home goods like mugs and that sort of thing. But our primary focus is on stationery, greeting cards, and like 2D art.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. I want to get in the heads of shop owners. I know we have a lot of private conversations behind the scenes, but I think it's super helpful for our listeners to hear what is going on with all of you and how you are being affected by the economy and what's going on in your shops with your customers. So let's talk about the summer season that we're recording this at the end of September. So talk to me about the summer sales season for all of you. Was it slower this year than in years past? Was it on par with years past? Jen, do you want to start this and then we'll go to Katie?
Yeah, it's really interesting for me because I don't have a good amount of data. We opened in 2019 and then like right before our first anniversary, the pandemic hit. And so then we were closed for a whole summer. And then I think we benefited last year from being connected to a lot of outdoor space. And so we had a lot of foot traffic when people were starting to feel more comfortable going out more in 2021, 2022. And then this year it's rained every weekend on the East Coast.
Oh my gosh.
So rude.
Either one or both of the days has rained. So it's really impacted like the festival season. There's a lot of outdoor markets and like art festivals and music festivals in Boston in the summer. So it's definitely been hard to predict how things will go. And while we haven't been struggling, it wouldn't be fair to say we've been struggling. It's definitely been really unpredictable and not better than last year. So we saw a lot of growth in the first couple of years. And now it would be wrong to call it steady because it's erratic. So it's hard for me to even describe what's happening this past summer.
That makes it difficult to plan. It makes it difficult for you to forecast and manage your cash flow too. We look at past data points and we kind of base our decisions on that. But when the weather or other things like that come in the way, it makes it much more difficult for you as a business owner to track that and decide what to do. Katie, what about you? How was your summer sales season? Did you see a difference year over year as you looked at your numbers or even just the vibe of traffic in the shop?
Yeah, I would say like in 2023 in general, chaos reigns. I'm a person who likes patterns. I like to be able to not necessarily predict things, but kind of plan accordingly. And I tend to be a little bit on the conservative side. We don't like carrying debt in our business. And so that means that it can be a little bit tricky because you're essentially making decisions for things like holiday and even the next month based on your sales for that month and then any data you have from the year before. Similar to Jen, we opened in 2018, and then we had kind of a half open walk-up shop situation through all of 2020 and the first half of 2021. So 2022 is the first year that I had like a solid year of data in a while, and we had grown a lot since we opened in 2018. And it's just nonsensical. Over the summer, we've had months that are traditionally very slow that have been very busy for us, which is wonderful. But then they're followed by a month that is traditionally busy that's a lot sleepier than usual. And that really kind of messes with that like up and down of cash flow to try and plan. You know, you got to restock a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm thinking, well, this last month that's usually really slow was busy. So this next month that I know is going to be a home run is going to be out of the park. And it's not always like that. And I'm thankful that we live in, our shop is in an area that has a lot of tourism and traffic. Unfortunately, that area is also Los Angeles, where as we speak, the writers have reached the end of their strike, but the actors are still on strike. And we're on the east side, so it doesn't feel like Hollywood over here, but it is. The industry is so far reaching in LA that it means that the things that we're sheltered from normally, economically speaking, all of those protections were sort of stripped from us this summer. And it hasn't been until the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or so that we really started to notice, like, wasn't even that traffic was down. It was just that people are spending less money. We're seeing more transactions at a lower amount. And I think that's true. Jen, has that been true for you? Like, I don't know that that's just LA.
No, I think that's across the board. And, you know, in all the little shopkeeper groups that I've been around, it's a combination of both here. I think depending on what neighborhood you are, both spending and foot traffic have been down. I'm kind of lucky because we're on a main road now. And so we haven't seen a decrease in like number of people, but the amount of the dollar value per sale has definitely been lower.
I also think that we're talking a little bit, Jen, you and I were talking a little bit about this the other day, but the way that we've seen things move with social media has had such an impact, I think, on everybody's business. But for us, the biggest thing that I notice is we get a lot of traffic from Instagram. Our locals are really plugged into that. They pay attention to what we have that's new, or at least I like to think they pay attention to what we have that's new in the shop and that sort of thing. The flip side of that is that we're really seeing that a majority of our online traffic, which isn't a ton of our sales, it's maybe 15% or so, but that online traffic can come through and decimate a single product that we fully sell out of. And it's the only thing that anyone is looking for. And then when that thing is gone, it's over. That can be really frustrating as somebody who's used to brick and mortar. Like, the point is to get people in the door, have them look at all the beautiful things that we've curated for them instead of just the one thing that really hit.
Yeah, that's an interesting and tricky inventory management situation, because you can't predict what that hot one thing is going to be online and stock up on it ahead of time.
Oh, yeah. If I could, I'd be a very, very wealthy woman.
Well, if you could predict all that, I'd tell you, you'd be a wealthy woman.
Yeah, I'd be playing in the wrong market, right?
Yes, exactly. Jen, have you had similar situations like that where you're selling out of certain products or there's certain things that are selling more quickly than others?
Yeah, for sure. And it's hard to tell what the balance would be and how to keep certain things in stock. So I think the first thing that comes to mind is I feel like Zodiac things have been even more popular than normal this year, but not every sign. And so it's really hard to know, like, and you'd think that people would buy it during the season, like, and so we try to stock up because we think that, this is not an accurate example, but say Pisces would be getting a lot around their birthday in the spring, but it turns out it's not Pisces buying for themselves. It's somebody at like a holiday time buying for the Pisces they know because they like Zodiac stuff, whereas Leos buy for Leos. Like, it's so, and I'm just randomly pulling out Zodiac signs, but it just felt like what we thought we were doing to stock appropriately was never right. And we could never predict what was going to happen. So we're like, okay, well, this was really popular. Virgo season starting. Let's buy a lot of Virgo candles. Didn't buy enough. They were all gone. Like, but not keychains, just candles. So I don't know how you plan around that. Like,
I was going to say, not to sound like resident LA gal, but I have so many thoughts on Zodiac things. We carry a few different Zodiac items in the shop. And like, I am here to tell you as a Libra rising myself that Libras buy for themselves and also love to be purchased for. So like, no matter what it is we have, Libra always goes first. My mom is a Taurus. Taurus stuff never sells. We have one poster that's technically Taurus themed. And I just think it's a really great design and that one sells. But everything else, it's like, I feel like you could write an entire book about like which signs like to be purchased for, which signs spend all their money, like that sort of thing.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's very funny.
I would have never, ever thought about that or considered that.
It's a hot topic of conversation around our shop.
But that's a question a lot of manufacturers have. I mean, how many conversations, Katie, have we had at Paper Camp where it's like, I want to do monogrammed products and do I do the whole alphabet, or I want to do Zodiacs, do I do the whole range of them? And as we're seeing now, some of them sell better than others. That's so funny.
Well, whatever you do, make your Libra item absolutely sick, because I feel like Libras not only enjoy Libra stuff, but they also feel like they always get like the short end of the stick in terms of the design. So hot tips, design for Libras.
Hilarious. Hilarious. Okay. Given what we've talked about, like this instability you've had over the summer, I mean, Katie, you mentioned that some months you were expecting it to be slow and it was actually pretty great for sales, and other months you expected it to be good for sales and it wasn't. And Jen, you kind of alluded to the same, the erratic sales. How are you then taking this information and moving forward as you prepare for the Q4 sales season that's upcoming? Is it changing the way you're purchasing or stocking your stores or merchandising your stores? Jen, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think it's made me hesitant, because if I think back to last year, I had done a good amount. It's late September now. I had done a good amount of holiday shopping by now, and I have not. Like, there's other reasons for that. We just moved into a bigger location. But I also, when we were first planning the move and the build of the new vacation, not a vacation. I do not get vacations.
The opposite of vacation.
The opposite of vacation that is happening in my life right now is this new store. And last year when we signed the paperwork and started the build plan, I had a schedule based on what I thought I knew about when I would be buying for the holiday, how I would have to start thinking about like ramping up my purchasing in order to fill the bigger space and move. And then when it came down to it, we decided to just move with what we had, and we didn't buy anything new until we didn't start doing purchasing until the day after we moved into the new space and like saw how much we could fill with all of our back stock, all of our inventory, and started figuring it out from there. And I think that's because I don't know how to predict what's going to happen. And I just had a huge outlay of cash and all these other bills coming in from the build. I have to decide every week, basically, which bill do I pay or do I get more inventory? And it feels a little bit like starting over in a way.
Yeah, I bet. One thing that keeps coming across, and Katie, I'm going to come back to you about your Q4 planning and how you're addressing this. But one thing that has come across through several of the answers I've heard is that you are both being very strategic and very conservative and thoughtful in your spending and your planning and your budgeting. But at the same time, there's so many external factors that are outside of your control that are constantly making you go back to the drawing board to reassess and change your initial plan. And I know how exhausting and frustrating that can be. And I know that brands have that same type of thing happen over different circumstances. But I want to acknowledge that you are both very strategic business owners, and I know how much work you're putting into this. So just, you're seen. I see what you're doing, and please know it's important for you to be recognized for that. But Katie, let's talk about you preparing for Q4, given what the last years looked like.
Yeah. So I'm in a slightly different situation than Jen, because we don't have, like, we haven't just opened a new store. We're not actively expanding in that particular way right now, which has meant that I kind of have been working throughout this year to set aside money. We had a very good holiday season last year, but I got caught a little with my pants down in terms of, even despite all of my planning, we really had to kind of race around a little bit to get some last minute stuff. And I really had a much higher buying output in January than I was prepared for. I would have preferred to have that come in Q4 and then be able to just have a normal budget for January. So my strategy this year was to set that money aside. And obviously we're kind of playing it month by month, because what we do is just like a percentage more than usual for August, September, October, and November, but I piece it out. So it's not like I have to spend all of my money at one time in November, because we found I mean, this is a whole nother topic we can get into, but the way that brands have been shipping stuff recently is so frustrating to me. Like, we had some brands that we ordered from at trade shows in February that weren't shipping us things that we'd paid for until like May. And I was very concerned about that happening for the holiday, because if you get stuff too late, I'm not one to cancel an order. I've been on the other side of that. I'm not trying to do that. But if you're in a situation where your stuff doesn't show up until December 20th, it's like you literally can't sell through it. So anyway, I wanted to err on the side of getting things a little bit earlier. So I joke every year that the best time to shop with us is in late October, early November, because we have all the best stuff. The store is like gorgeous. It's bursting at the seams. My employees all think I've finally lost my mind because we have like hundreds of pairs of socks and they're like, nobody ever buys this many socks. And then we finally hit December and it all starts to just fly out the door. You have to hope you made the right decisions. We don't carry a lot of specifically holiday items. So we do sell like one brand of ornaments, but they're the type of thing you could kind of get away with selling year round. We don't have anything really that's like explicitly Christmas or Hanukkah or any winter holiday. So the benefit of that is that I'm kind of hedging my bets and being like, well, it's going to be busier than normal. So worst case scenario, my budget in January and February just shrinks significantly because it's all vendors that we're carrying year round.
Yeah. And because you're not selling a lot of seasonal products, you know that inventory will be okay to have out in January, February, and all of that. So that does curb some of this worry. Jen, what about you? I mean, how much holiday seasonal type stuff are you actually selling in the store versus what's everyday type products that can be merchandise year round?
I think during the holiday, because we're a stationery store, particularly with cards, which are our biggest seller, it's almost all holiday. Some kind of holiday theme. So from like Thanksgiving to every other time of the year, it's birthday cards or friendship cards. And then from probably around November to January, it's all some sort of seasonal. Like Thanksgiving's gotten a little bit more popular as people do that. We have more options for Halloween this year than we've ever had. But Christmas for sure, Christmas cards are the thing. And then in terms of our other giftables, there are things that we carry in the holiday season that we don't carry during the regular time of year typically, but we might now that we have more space. And that's less holiday themed and more just like giftable items. So we bring in more soaps and more different kinds of candles, even though we have candles year round. And some of those will have more, not necessarily holiday themed, but definitely seasonal scents. But we do that with candles all year round. Like people want sea salt in the summer and like lemon and grapefruit, and they want cozy scents in the fall and winter. And so even if they're not specifically like balsam fir or like something that's like Christmas hearth, they're definitely more in that kind of wintry smells in that time. And I like to balance it out with things that feel very Christmassy because people like them for like housewarming gift or like host gifts and those things, but also a little bit that could last past. So I don't have to be thinking about doing buying in January.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not worrying about the sell through of everything of, am I going to get stuck with something that's going to be out of season soon?
What I try not to do is have dates, because a lot of Christmas cards and a lot of ornaments, we'll just wrap them and bring them back next year if they don't sell.
I was going to say, I'm interested to see how this plays out this year. We see a lot more leniency on price point. We have a pretty price sensitive customer, especially for Los Angeles, I think. And during December, I just feel like that kind of goes out the window for a lot of people. People are still on a budget, but they're more willing to not complain about the price of a candle or the price of a light or whatever during this time of year. So again, I've kind of hedged my bets with not bringing in too much. We don't really carry anything that I feel is expensive or overpriced, but things that are more bespoke or on a higher price point, I'm being a little bit more conservative there. But I'm interested to see if that holds this year or if we like only sell stickers and nail polish. We certainly have plenty of both of those things.
And socks. Don't forget the socks.
Yeah, so many socks. So many, and hair claws. Good God.
I love it. Love it. Which kind of leads me to my next thing, which we've touched on a little bit here and there. Has the current economic climate affected your businesses? And if so, how? I mean, we're seeing, I filled up my gas tank yesterday and shared on social that it was like $6 and like, I don't remember, 60 some odd cents a gallon here. And everyone's like, go to Costco. I'm like, yeah, I couldn't get there. But my point is just like, we're seeing groceries rise. We're seeing all sorts of things of general day-to-day living that are rising. Has this trickled down to your store? Are you seeing it in the buying patterns of your customers? Jen, you want to go first? Then we'll go to Katie.
I think so. When I look at the average sale price, like we're doing roughly, maybe we'll do a few more sales year over year, but they're all lower.
Lower AOV.
Yeah. And I think people are buying more of the like long, other than cards, people are buying things that last a little longer. So they're not buying like candy as much. Like they'll, like if they have the choice of something that's similar price points, they'll buy something that seems like it'll last like longer. And it still feels like they're willing to spend if they think it's a decent value. Like they'll buy the hair claw that looks a little bit sturdier for $8 versus the one that looks like it might be flimsier for $4, but they'll only buy one. Whereas maybe a year ago they would have bought their three favorite colors. And it feels like there's more debates happening in the store of like, should I buy these three jelly rolls or this one $6 pen? And so it's interesting to hear more of that than I have in the past.
It's interesting that you talk about the indecision of customers or the mental battle of weighing this or that, two lower priced items, one higher priced items. And I'm thinking about this from the manufacturer standpoint and how I'm constantly telling them, like, make it easy for your customers to buy, reduce decision fatigue, reduce the friction. And you all are faced with the same thing in how you're merchandising and all this other stuff. So it just, I didn't mean to take us down a different road. Katie, go ahead and weigh in with like, if the current economic, I mean, you already talked about the LA market itself with the strike affecting, but I also feel like there's a trickle down that happens and it's a little bit slow to sometimes hit the retail market. Do you agree with that? Or what else are you seeing?
Yeah, I think that's true. I would say that in general, my buying strategy as a relatively frugal person myself is I try and always make sure for art supplies specifically that we have a really basic student grade version of something, a kind of middle of the road, like great solid option of something, and then a more bespoke high end version of something. And I've really tried to apply that to our gift stuff as well. So that if you're, you know, you're coming in and trying to buy a candle, for instance, you can buy the little tiny one that you can get for $6, or you can go all in on a bigger one that's locally hand poured for $40. And I think trying to apply that across all of the different types of things that we have in the shop, because my most important thing when things feel like this, and it so often feels like this, I mean, the economy is shitty right now, but like there are always folks who don't have enough money. There are always folks who need to be on a budget. These are not everybody who wants nice, like we all want nice things. We all want little treats. And depending on like where you're at in your life or what your priorities are, like you don't always have that much to work with. And so making sure that our shop feels like a space that you can walk in and say, okay, I've got $10 to spend on myself today. Like, can I get 6 jelly rolls? Great. And then on another day when you have $100 to spend, you can really go buck wild. But I think that that strategy has served us well because a kid can walk in with a $5 bill and walk out with multiple items just as well as somebody can really put in some work and spend a few $100s. And I think that trying to make sure that we're just taking this wave as it comes and having options for those customers who are everyone right now, I think that's key to longevity in retail.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I love how you talked about the different tiers, because you're right. There's a customer for each of those markets and someone looking for, and let's make sure we have something for everyone so they can find what they need.
Well, and also just the idea of like, especially in art supplies, quality is so often tied to price unless you get really big. But especially now, like with all the supply chain stuff that we saw during COVID, it's like if you're spending more money, you are probably getting something nicer. But I think understanding that just because supposedly that's the best option, you still want to be able to draw, whether you're using a $1 pencil or an $8 pencil.
Yeah, for sure. Jen, you mentioned earlier that you're in shopkeeper groups. I know, Katie, you're in shopkeeper groups. I'm curious, what's on the minds of shopkeepers right now? Like, what kind of things are keeping you all, and maybe it's not you specifically, but in general, what kind of things are keeping retailers up at night these days?
I've been seeing more than a couple who are afraid of even just making rent. And so I think the foot traffic in different areas. And it's really close. Like a couple of them are only a couple blocks away from me. So like, while I can't say that we've seen a decrease in foot traffic that I can feel, some people are saying they're not seeing anyone come in at all on a given day. And so that means there's something happening with the way people are moving around our city and in our neighborhoods, or what they're able to see, or what's stopping them from like browsing the way they used to, or like hanging around in the neighborhoods. And so, and then even further out, I'm in a stationary specific group in Massachusetts, and a few of us were talking about getting together, and somebody put out the call, like, can we do this now? Is anybody as stressed as I am right now? So I think there's that at some level, for different reasons, everyone's feeling like they're having a hard time predicting what's going to happen and aren't sure how to plan for the holidays. Cause if the holidays are like the summer, then that's really scary, because like, if the thing that you can count on isn't going to be what you hope it will be, and everybody's kind of like trying to keep their eye on Q4 every year, then how does that work? Like, what do you do? Like, how do you plan for that?
How do you plan for that? And how do you sustain if the cash flow is not there?
How do you make it through?
Yeah, for sure. Katie, what about you? What are you seeing?
I was going to say that the problem with retail is that December pays for so much of our year. I mean, you have a good December, you're set up to be able to give all your employees raises and keep well staffed and have staffing during times where maybe foot traffic doesn't warrant it. It's not a busy time, but like the luxury of being able to provide a stable place of employment for folks and have all those things that you need, and trying to pay people a living wage, all of that gets a lot tougher when you're not making money. And I think that in California, that's been a big conversation, because I think everybody wants to be able to provide more benefits and better pay for their employees and for themselves too. And being able to sustain that during times that feel so up and down can be very unpredictable, because it's not like we're all sitting on a pile of money that we're just, I think about this time of year, no matter if it's busy or not, is always stressful to me, because if it's busier than we expect, great, we have more money. All of a sudden, I'm running through all the stuff that I bought for Q4 already, and now I have to start figuring out, well, is this going to sell well in December? Do I need to buy more of it? If it's slow, that's stressful too, because as I've laid out my fantastic plan, that also means I have to pay for those things. You know, it's not like I'm just letting it ride on a credit card until the end of the year. I'm paying that balance off every single month, and we're buying more than we're selling. That's the whole idea, so that we have a nice stock shop. So yeah, when you can't lean on that, I think that's really stressful. And yeah, I just think in general, we talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago, but in the wholesale game, I've noticed for many years that election years tend to be much slower. Folks are just stressed out during election years, regardless of what happens. And 2024 is just around the corner. And I think that the uncertainty of where politics are right now, people much more important than us are messing up much more important budgets than ours. And all of those things are kind of hanging over our head. And it just feels like so many things are kind of in the balance. And then you've got this. It's been funny to reintroduce myself to my high school economics crash course on inflation to understand like, oh, well, we want to pay people more and we have to charge more for the things that people want to buy. And then people are mad at us because things cost more. And all of these things are just a snake eating its own tail, you know?
Yeah. I resonate with a lot of what both of you are saying. I think the amount of uncertainty right now, I'm hearing the same types of concerns from manufacturers of summer was slow. What is the Q4 season going to look like? If we can't make ends meet in Q4, are we going to be able to continue into next year? If we're able to continue into next year, what is the election going to do to our sales and our marketing? And how are we going to maintain visibility, for example, when there's so much noise on the internet about the elections or other things that are going on? And so I just want to tie those two things together to show that what's working and not working with you all as shopkeepers definitely also affects those of us that are selling to all of you, that are selling products to the wholesale market. And I want to share that with our listeners too, so that they can understand the correlation and the relatability of it, that sometimes they get down on themselves of like, oh, I'm pitching this shop and they're not responding. And it's like, it oftentimes has nothing to do with you or your product. It's the time that you're catching the buyer, or the buyer's moving their shop, or somebody's out sick, or there's a million reasons why someone may not respond to a wholesale pitch. So I don't know if you have any thoughts or things you want to add to that portion of the conversation.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to piggyback on what Katie was saying, because I'm stressed about this Q4, but I'm already pre-stressed about next year's Q4.
Oh, gosh.
Because we did our first in-house calendar this year, and I'm super proud of it. It looks great. But as we were doing that, I looked, and it's not only an election year, and maybe this happens every presidential election year because of the way leap years work, but it's one of those ones where there's really only three weekends between Thanksgiving and Christmas, like functionally speaking. And so it's like a stressful year because you don't know how people are going to be reacting to everything else that's going on, and also a very short holiday season, and trying to think about, okay, well, how important now Q4 feels to stabilize next year is a little bit hard to wrap my mind around. But back to your comment about how it all kind of trickles down, like it is very important to me because like I have been a maker, and I had put my own line on pause to do this fun experiment of Tiny Turns. And a lot of my friends are brands that we sell. And a lot of the brands that we sell have become my friends. So it's super important to me to pay people and to like keep supporting their businesses. But that only works if my customers continue supporting my business. And I have employees that I have to pay, and I want to be a fair employer. I want to make sure that like, it's very expensive where we live. So I'm trying to make sure that our employees, I can't offer them the same kind of benefits package that a large operation can, but I can try and give them the hours and like pay time off and other kinds of perks that I can do. And that's only possible if I can make a certain amount every month. So it's a constant shell game. And lately, I don't think I know where the shell is. It's the problem.
Big thanks to Jen and Katie for joining me today. As a reminder, this episode, number 316, is part of a 2-part series. So be sure to subscribe to Proof to Product on your favorite podcast player so that you don't miss episode 317 when it comes out next week. In part 2 of this series, we'll be talking about the importance of communication between vendors and shop owners, zip code protection, and how these shop owners are utilizing FAIR. If you want to hear from more shop owners about their buying preferences, how they like to be pitched, and how much follow-up is too much follow-up, be sure to check out our Unlock Buyer Secrets interview series at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. This on-demand interview series brings you into private conversations that you cannot get elsewhere, and it gives you a competitive edge by helping you understand what independent boutique owners want and need from you. It's only $27, and you can start listening right now at prooftoproduct.com/unlock. Thanks for listening until the end. I'll be back next week with the rest of my conversation with Jen and Katie. Have a wonderful week.